drive on the road beyond my years. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Hey guys, hello. Welcome to the Primary Purpose Fort Lauderdale Big Book Study Group Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Steve. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a minute, shut off any cell phones or devices that are going to make noise or distract others. Just get situated. We take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on tonight's step study. Is everybody ready?
Ready.
All right, let's get started. Join me in the fog light prayer. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light. For those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I ask Dylan to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Good evening, I'm Dylan, a recovering alcoholic.
The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience, or more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Thank you, Dylan. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting. Set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just shut them off for the hour. We got a little bit of a late start, and I just want to bring Joe up, and this is my last night to chair. Thank you for everything, Joe. This has been amazing. So.
Thanks, Stevie. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Evening, everybody. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Joe Bear. Good to be here, and I want to thank you all for being here. Rough night to be on 95. You know, a couple of raindrops, everybody just goes crazy. Thank you, Steve, and what a great friend you are. You know, that's what this deal is all about. You get to meet people and become, you know, lifelong friends. You know, you get to access that place within you where it's not a head-to-head relationship. It's not the cerebral thing that's going on, the superficial relationship that we tend to have before we do this change through this process. And, you know, you get to live from your heart, and you get to really know people intimately and in a way that I believe that God always intended us to have these type of relationships. And I believe, and I know, it's not I believe, I don't believe anymore. I know these things that because they've been revealed to me, that the intimacy and heart-to-heart relationship that is necessary to possess a sense of ease and comfort with certainty all the time, any time of the day or night, that comes from God, comes through this internal thing that we do. And so, I mean, there's a few things that I want to talk about. And I prepped today and spent some time. And then, of course, I got on 95. And everything that I was thinking of saying, I forgot. But you know, the good news is my first sponsor says, "Well, you got a manual. You always talk about this, right? You've always got all the information right here in front of you. And, you know, it says in the beginning, it instructs us of what we're supposed to talk about from here. And we're supposed to talk about the way we develop a relationship with a power greater than ourselves. You know, that's what we're supposed to share. And once you do that, once you develop that relationship, once you go through this process and he becomes the central fact of your life, my life, that's all you want to talk about. So it's really all I want to talk about tonight. However, because this is a step series, I'm going to talk about the way that I was introduced into this thing. We spent 3 weeks talking about some really important information to prepare us to make a decision that will ultimately change our entire existence on this planet. Change our entire lives, our entire perspectives, our worldviews, our philosophy of life. What is important, what is not important. You know, the things that create quality of life, right? And so let me begin by talking about what Dylan had read in Spiritual Experience in the back of the book. I wish they put it in the front of the book. I wish they put it like before the preface. But that, you know, it is what it is. Probably would have freaked a lot of people out, I guess. I don't know. Probably wouldn't have gotten to the preface for a lot of people, right? So, you know, we see a timeline in there. And it says what often takes place within a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. I think we've all done that self-discipline thing. I think we've all felt that for whatever reason, we needed to figure this thing out on our own terms. And a lot of us attempted to do that. I know I did. I attempted to do it for 16 years and was walking in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous with untreated alcoholism. I had never done anything to address the alcoholism. I had never done anything to address the internal condition that drove me and preceded the obsession kicking my butt all the time. See, when the obsession of the mind is prevalent in an alcoholic, a.k.a. addict, all right, even though it goes dormant, a lot of times it'll go dormant, we'll get into a halfway, we'll get into a structured environment, and all of a sudden things get real rosy, and listen, they get rosy when we stop drinking. People start really being glad that we're not drinking and drugging. And, you know, the cops stop stopping us and we stop getting in trouble. And, you know, there's certain things that happen that are a benefit as a result of just not drinking. And it disillusions us into thinking, well, that's all I need to do. But we get into this structured environment and the obsession goes dormant because we're starting to reacclimate into society. We get a little job, we get, you know, some nice relationships. The stress goes away a little bit, right? But we're still driven by the past and the fear of the future. And what happens is that when the obsession is prevalent, when that internal condition is not medicated to the degree that it needs to be through this process, and we just kind of ignore it and pretend that it's just not there, you know, and I'm talking about that fear and regret and remorse and shame and bitterness and loneliness and all those things we come into AA with that still exist even though we stop drinking and drugging. When that stuff festers up and it gets to a point where it's screaming for a sense of ease and comfort, right? That condition precedes the obsession. And the obsession is nothing more than a thought or group of thoughts that come in the form of a conversation within our mind that will give us permission to put the very thing that's killing us in our body. And it sounds like this a lot of times, right? Nobody will know. It'll be different this time. I'll just do a little of this and I won't touch that. I know that was my downfall. You know, I think she's hot. I think, you know, whatever that thing is that we believe will give us a sense of ease and comfort and distract us from the internal condition, we'll make the supreme. We'll delude ourselves into thinking, I can do this safely. I can be with her safely. I can go to the casino safely. I can hang with those fellas safely. I can do whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. We engage, right? And ultimately, what happens in our mind is what we're thinking about. And when that stuff doesn't work, my mind will start thinking about the drink and the drug that I absolutely know will work. It'll erase it for a minute, right? And my mind doesn't go to that conversation of what it did to me. The only thing I can think about is what the drink and the drug did for me, internal condition, right? And I believe I'm going to be able to do it without harm. I put it in my body and I kick in that allergy and I can't stop. So we established that. And so now, like, we've established a couple of things. You know, we get to how it works. We read it all the time in every meeting. We don't do it in this meeting. We don't do it in the meeting that I'm a home group, that's my home group, until we get to the fifth chapter. And that's where we're at tonight. And hold on a second. I'm going to have these little pauses. So we get to the end of how it works, and we see it all the time, and it's the ABCs, and it says, you know, something about the chapter to the agnostic, our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas, three really important ideas. A, that we're alcoholic and couldn't manage our life. Now, we make that determination. We make that declaration. We come to that conclusion and concede it to our innermost self based on the information of what was written in the doctor's opinion, and there's a solution more about alcoholism, right? We can stand in our skin after looking at that information and marrying it with our past and our drinking history and drugging history, that when we put it in, we can't stop, and when we're stopped, we can't stay stopped. We can't stop starting because no human power. And then it says, B, that no human power could relieve us of our alcoholism or keep me stopped. Right? Being relieved of my alcoholism means I'm able to stay stopped. But no human power has ever been able to do that. Right? And that C, I knew that was going to happen. I tricked you all. You know, I used to be that person that would always chime in with that course line and never, ever sought. Knew the course line. Could let people around me know that I know what it says. Have them hopefully believe that I've sought and never sought. Right? All I did was just not drink and go to meetings. And walked around with untreated alcoholism. And eventually went out back every time. Right? I was a detoxer, retoxer. Detox, retox. Detox, retox. And nothing in between. I'd go to halfways, I'd do this, I'd go to treatment, I'd go to jail, and like still do nothing. And then ultimately, I would always retox because the internal condition always drove me, right? So, we've come to those conclusions that God could and would if he were sought. We may have come to that conclusion, to that ultimatum, but many of us never went any further. See, the next line says, being convinced with every fiber in our body, we were at step three. And that was that we made a decision to turn our will, which is our thoughts, our thinking, and our lives, which is a culmination of our actions, over to the care of God. Okay, so just in the book's going to tell us exactly what's going to defeat us every time. Now, many of us think it's that I can't get a job, and I can't get that car, and I can't get that girl, and I can't get this, and I can't get that, and that's what defeats me every time. And that's not the case. What defeats me is the man in the mirror. What defeats me is my What defeats me is my obsession with my appetites, my demand for more of everything, my entitlement, my selfishness, my self-centeredness, my self-consumption, my self-absorption, self-manifested in a thousand different ways, right? Self consumed. And it says this, it says, so I'm convinced that I'm powerless over alcohol, my life had become unmanageable, my thinking had become unmanageable, that no human power has been able to keep me stopped, because I know it's evidence, right? I have evidence. And I'm making this declaration only God could and would if he were stopped, because you're telling me that's the only way out. Right? So now I must seek. But they're gonna go into this description of how I defeat myself every time after I've made the decision, in between the decision and the action. Okay? So it's really important. If you make the decision that you're in, it's imperative that you immediately, like, because of the way they have it worded, like next and like at once, we do this inventory. Because if not, this is going to take over. God, I read this and it was like getting shotgunned between the eyes. I said, how did they got me in here. I mean, what a perfect description this is. Being convinced, we were at step three. Which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Now listen, you can have a very vague conception. You can have a very educated conception. You can have a very distant conception. You can have no conception. Even though you know of God, right? You can still remain barren because you never did anything formally to engage in any understanding. That's possible. I believe we all know and have heard of him, right? It's just like I told you a week or two ago, you know, I've got my sister and she is just a phenomenal woman. She's got a great family and she's a wonderful mother and she's a wonderful daughter and she's a wonderful friend and a wonderful worker and a wonderful boss. But every single person that knows her has a different conception, aka relationship with my sister. I know her differently than her employees know her. I know her differently than her boss knows her. I know her differently than my mom knows her. Or than my sisters know. But we all have a conception of her and a relationship with her. It's the same thing with what we're talking about here, right? So it says that we decided to turn our will, which is our thoughts and our life, our actions over to God's care as we understood him. What do we mean by that, and just what do we do? Okay, so here we go. We're going to find out the impasse that's created, or it's already present. First requirement is that Job be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. How do I know that? Evidence. What drove me into AA? On that basis, Joe is almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though his motives are good. Joe tries to live by self-propulsion, willpower, right? Joe's like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. It'd be great. It'd be much better for you if it was like that. If Joe's arrangements would only stay put, if only people do what Joe wanted, or as Joe wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including Joe, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, Joe may be sometimes quite virtuous. Joe may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, Joe may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, Joe is most likely to have mastered all traits. See, I use those things to get what it is I say I want. To get what it is I think is going to give me an ease and comfort, sense of ease and comfort, a sense of being satisfied, a sense of being accomplished, a sense of being, you know, whatever it is, right? But here's what usually happens. Show doesn't come off very well. Joe begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. Joe begins to suck his thumb and cry about it, right? Joe decides to exert himself more willpower, more determination, more perseverance. Joe becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may warrant. I'm ad-libbing a few words in here, but you get what I'm saying. Still, the play doesn't suit him. Admitting I may be somewhat at fault, I'm sure other people are more to blame. My sponsor said I came in here with a big V etched in my forehead. You know how we look, like when we're real victims. You know, it's like that thing that comes in the middle of your eyebrows, right? Stands for victim. Everybody else's fault. Nobody's doing what I want them to do. The world sucks. Life sucks. Jobs, everything sucks, right? And it's your fault. It's not my fault, right? I get to be right about you being wrong. My life stays in the toilet. Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever changes. It just sucks. Right? Consummate victim. Well, admitting others that I'm somewhat at fault, I'm sure other people are to blame, I become angry, indignant, self-pitying, restless, irritable, discontent. Right? What is Joe's basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? They say we make decisions based on self that later place us in a position to be hurt. So I'm gaming you all these times. I'm gaming you, whoever you are, I'm going to game you to get what it is I say I want, right? I'm going to lead in, right? What's my basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Kind's the cover story. Am I not a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness and ease and comfort out of this world if I only manage it better? And manage you better? Is it not evident to all of you or the rest of the players that these are the things I really want? See, gamers know gamers. Selfish, self-centered people know selfish, self-centered people. And we know when somebody's being inauthentic and trying to game us for something, right? Even if it's just thinking I'm a nice guy. I'm going to tell you you're great because that's what I want you to think of me. And aren't all the rest of the players know that these things are what I truly want? And do not my actions make each of you wish to retaliate, snatching all you can get out of the show? Is not, even in my best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony. Joe is egocentric. Egocentered, self-centered, right? This guy is what always gets me, is what's always my downfall in the pursuit of seeking a relationship with him. I think I'm the master of my own destiny. I think I can do better. But I've got to come to a point in my life where it's like, I really am getting tired of the results, right? So, they say selfishness, self-centered. That we think is the root of all our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear. 100 forms of fear. Fear you're not going to like me. Fear you're going to reject me. Fear you're not going to think of me the way I want you to think of me. Fear you're not going to understand me the way I want you to be, that I want to be understood. Fear that I'm going to lose something that I have. Fear that I'm not going to get something that I want. And on and on and on. And I'm riddled with it. I'm riddled with it. All my decisions are based on it. All my decisions emanate from a condition of fear. Right? Says, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation. But invariably, we invariably find that at some time in the past, we've made decisions based on self, self-satisfaction, self-consumption, self-centeredness, selfishness, that later places us in a position to be hurt, right? So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Though he usually doesn't think so, of course not. It's your fault. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. And God makes that. He says we must be rid of the selfishness. We must or it kills us. And God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Wow. I mean, that's really powerful stuff. You know, and listen, this is a come to the truth moment for every one of us, especially those of us that are sitting in this room that have not made the decision to seek and done a four-step inventory. I must see who you get when I show up on the scene. And the only way I'm going to do that is not ask you, but I need to do it in the privacy of my own home on a four-step inventory. It says, you know, we talked about this keystone, this arch that we're building, that through we'll walk free men and women, free of bondage, free of bondage of self. And the cornerstone is being willing to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Believing or being willing to believe, based on the fact that we're dying when we get here, or life sucks, right? And then the keystone of this arch, right, is putting him in charge, making that declaration that we're going to stop running the show. We're going to stop managing our life. And it's because we suck at it. It says, this is how and why. But first of all, we had to quit playing God. Right? It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, beyond this decision, that God was going to be our director. That he's a principal and we're his agents. He's the father and we're his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Now listen. It always, every relationship that we develop always begins with some type of a belief that a relationship is possible with her, with it, with whatever, right? It's the same thing with God. You know, I believe that my relationship could, and my conception could change based on what people that have recovered are telling me. See, they're the evidence. The people that have recovered and had this transformation and this spiritual awakening that Dylan pointed out in the book, this profound alteration in our reaction to life, right? This unbelievable transformation that we go through, that I can believe that that's possible because, number one, my life is in a wreck, right? And AA, I'm driven into AA, and they're saying, look, do what we did. Do these things, you will have this transformation. You'll come to have this relationship. But you got to believe it's possible for you. And the reason it's possible for you is because it happened to me. And if it happened to me, it can happen to anybody. But I had to be willing to believe that it was possible. Anytime we begin with belief, doesn't mean we have faith. Faith is, I like to say, faith is belief in action. So they've written out a recipe for me to follow that if I do so, I will end up with a faith that works under all conditions. Right? So I don't have to figure it out. I don't have to say, hey, I have this wonderful faith, because that's crap. Right? At this point, at this juncture, all I have to say is, look, I believe what you're telling me is true, and I'm going to trust you because my life is terrible. Dying is more attractive for me. That was my come from. That was where I was parked when I got here, right? And so based on that belief, they're saying, This is where I've come to. And notice they're going to use words that are really important here, because if I don't have the ingredient that they're mentioning here, I'm not going to get much, right? The ingredients that they're talking about is sincerely, right? When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. But it's a conditional statement. Sincere. My sincerity, my heartfelt motivation into this thing, my desire comes from the beating that I took. Nobody can give me that desire. Nobody can make me sincere in my heart to go after this, right? That's got to be done by drugs and alcohol and the beating that we take when we get here. The annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. You know what I'm saying? Right. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We have a new employer. Being all powerful, he provides what we needed. If we keep close to him, conversations, constant prayer, you know, and really, you know, thinking about that relationship, being conscious of that, and performing his work well, helping other people. It says, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, our script for life, so to speak, right? It says, more and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. New power will flow in as we move through this thing, right? It says when we sincerely took the position, the first step of what we do when we sincerely take the position, it's going to tell us at the bottom of the page. They're telling us what will happen as we move through this thing. They kind of do that. Bill does that sometimes. He'll tell us kind of like he'll dangle the carrot. He'll tell us what the carrot's like after we eat it. And then he'll tell us how to get there, right? It says, more and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we feel new power flow in, as we enjoy peace of mind, we discovered we could face life successfully. This doesn't happen here when I make the decision. It happens when I make the decision and validate it with the action that they're calling for. You with me? Like you get a cake in a box. In order to get the cake, you got to bake the cake. In order to bake the cake, you got to do the ingredients. Right? So it says, as we feel new power flow in, we joy peace of mind. Peace of mind. Wow. We discovered we could face life successfully. Quite a transformation from what we are when we get here. Right? It says we became convinced, we became conscious of his presence, and we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn, transformed, caterpillar to the butterfly. But this is the result of the action. Now, we're going to make a prayer. We're going to say a prayer at this juncture with our sponsors on our knees. It says, and it doesn't say that in the instructions, but everybody, I mean, that's kind of like 80 years of experience. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Because see, if I'm doing my will, I'm not doing his will. If I'm doing his will, I'm not doing my will. There is no in between. There's like no middle ground there, right? Take away my difficulties. Most people think that's low checkbooks and banged up cars or lack of cars or whatever. No, they're talking about defects here. The character liabilities that destroy my relationships. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them. My selfishness, my self-centeredness, my greed, my lust, my pride, my ego, my sloth, my irresponsibility, my lack of discipline, my no integrity, all of that. Take away that. That victory over that would bear witness of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And I do thy will always. Now this isn't something that I'm actually doing yet, but it's a desire in my heart. Right? And I'm sincerely asking him for this. So now it says this. Next. Once we make that decision, once we say that prayer, it says, next. We launched. You can kind of envision what that means. Right? Doesn't mean we sit on our butts. Next, we launched on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning. So the first action step is this. In the first two steps, we're engaged in reflection. We're engaged in identification. We're engaged in investigation of who we are, what we are, and how we did it. Right? We come to the conclusions of either I am or I'm not. Either they could or they couldn't. And he would if I seek him. Right? So, then we make the decision. Now, decision is nothing more than a decision. But if I make the decision in the third step, and I don't do the fourth step, all that is a nice intention. And didn't we all our lives want people to validate us for our intentions rather than our actions? Right? So, this is where I really move. And I make that turn to go in a direction I've never been. Because let me tell you something. When we make this decision and we do this thing, we're giving up our control of the outcome. We can't control the outcome of something we have no idea where we're going. The only thing I can control is the results that I've got. And I don't want those. I know what those are all about. So it says, next we launch out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision, third step decision, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Well, let me think of what could possibly have been blocking me. Well, I can start with the internal condition, right? What keeps me choked off from any kind of channeling with him, any kind of sourcing with him, right? Fear, regret, shame. Shame is huge, right? Shame is huge. Bitterness, remorse, loneliness, feeling like a loser, feeling like a failure, feeling like everybody looks at me like that. Everybody knows what I am because of how I feel, right? Failure. Over, repeated after, you know, coming into AA, going into halfway, building everybody else's, you know, building everybody's trust up, having them smile for change, mom sleeping at night for a change, you know, stop killing her by her emotions, and then tearing it down around her head because I never did anything. I never sincerely took the position, right? So, I mean, all these things will keep me choked off from the sunlight of the Spirit. When they say sunlight of the Spirit, I just liken it to God's grace, right? Relationship. Not to mention all the dominating appetites that I possess. Bill calls them instincts. I call them appetites, right? The desire for more personal prestige, to be popular, to be liked, to be looked at highly, to be thought of in a way that I would like to be thought of. So the masquerade is all trying to secure that from you, right? So I'm constantly trying to satisfy that personal instinct, right? My financial instinct, got to have more money, got to have this, got to have stuff. Sexual instinct, got to have her, got to have sex, got to have... And it all is intended to validate me as a human being, make me feel like a somebody because I feel like such a nobody, right? My ambitions. So, I mean, these appetites drive me. They have me perform on earth in a certain way where I am so self-consumed and so in tune with what I think will give me a sense of ease and comfort. It all but cuts me to ribbons, right? So it gets me to a place where I'm completely isolated from humanity. I mean, it just, you know, and I'm walking around pretending to you that I don't have it. I'm good. I'm all right. Yeah, I got this thing, you know. So anyway, we make a decision to take an inventory. And an inventory is simply nothing more than going and identifying the facts. It's a fact-finding. I'm going to go find the facts. And a fact-finding and a search, in other words, a searching, fact-finding, and fearless, fact-facing. I'm going to face the facts about the stock in trade. A fearless and moral, another word for truthful, right? Inventory. When you go into a business and they do an inventory, you just don't go into the warehouse and look at everything and see everything and like try to report that back. You go and you take it down on a piece of paper. You have certain items. You mark the number. It's an inventory. It's a catalog, right? So that's what Bill's having us do here. He describes this parallel between, you know, the commercial inventory and the inventory that we're going to take. But we're going to search out, just like you search out in a business or inventory, you go in, you look for the merchandise that doesn't work, the merchandise that's not moving, it's not selling, it's dented, it's broken, whatever. You get rid of it. None of us would keep that stuff because you're not going to make any money. You're going to go broke. The business will go broke, right? So you look at it, you find the facts, you face the facts, and you get rid of it promptly without regret. We're going to do the same thing with our lives. We're going to go inside. We're going to examine ourselves so that we can identify the flaws in our makeup that produce the results that we have with the relationships that we have. When we come in here, we're broken. Our relationships are broken. All of them. They were all superficial, broken at best. Right? So It says we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we search out the flaws in our makeup which had caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways is what had defeated us. So we considered its common manifestations, right? They talk about resentments. We're going to talk about resentments first, right? Resentments are the things that we hold grudges on. We hold grudges with other people, places, institutions, principles, all our lives. We feel that, you know, when we get here, we hold a lot of things, a lot of people, a lot of business, a lot of stuff responsible for our miserable life, for our lot in life, for the outcome of our life. And we're pissed off, right? Resentment comes from a Latin word, and re, everybody knows re means again, right? So relapse, retox, you know, resent, you know, that type of thing. It means again. Sentire is a Latin word that describes sentiment, and it just means to feel. So when we say resentment, it means to feel again. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again. So when we have a resentment with somebody, think about it. When somebody pisses you off, man, it's like game on. It's like, now they're gone. They've gone on their way, but they're living in my mind. They're just driving me. Over and over and over. The more I play that encounter, that thing, that whatever happened, right? Whatever they did, they offended me, or they hurt me, or they gossip about me, or they, whatever, right? And I'm just like, going over it in my head. And the more I go over it, the more I make them wrong, and the less I don't even look at my part in it. Right? See, a lot of people get into the mistake of looking at this page, which is page 65, and seeing the three columns and thinking that's it to the inventory. It's not. What the inventory has us do is it has us identify the person, the institution, could be the probation officer, it could be the church, it could be the jail system, it could be the hospital system, it could be the VA system, it could be any system, it could be anything, right? And we identify that. It says to the first thing that we, it says this, it says, by the way, from this thing called resentment, it says it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. It doesn't mean that because we do this that we're immune from copping of resentment. Just go pissed off. I mean, I had a few on the way here tonight. You know what I mean? The guys that rode with me will tell you. It says, from it stem all forms of spiritual dis-ease. Dis-ease. So if we're looking for ease and comfort, this is a wrong thing to have. Dis-ease. For we've not only been mentally and physically ill, people say it's a twofold disease, but it manifests itself in spiritual bankruptcy. Right? It says we've been spiritually sick. And listen to this. Listen to this, all you people that are like within the first couple months and, you know, you're on this track, right? It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, then we straighten out mentally and physically. Whoa. For 16 years, I chased the material. I said, you know, if I get the job and I get, you know, let me get the job, let me get the car, let me get the girl, and then I'm going to work on this stuff. It never, ever worked. It never, ever worked. I had the cart before the horse. I didn't even see that because I never read this book. So I had to do this first. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. The way we do that is through this process. It says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So we had that. We had this inventory sheet, right? Mine are, the ones that I use are separated into five columns. In the first column is the list. People, places, institutions. It says this. It says, we listed people, institutions, and principles with whom we were angry, period. First exercise. Not to the right, top to bottom. I make the list. Listen, alcoholics don't think about more than one thing at a time real good. Bill knew this, so he said, make the list, period. Just go make the list. Listen, when we start listing people who piss us off, or we feel altered our course of our destiny or our lives for the worse or for in a negative way, it's easy to put them down. But we start thinking about what they did, and then we get back to the first column or to the list, And we're all messed up with other stuff. All we do is make the list, top to bottom. You work an inventory, top to bottom. All right? Then it says this. We ask ourselves why we're angry. God, I don't know about you guys, but I was a really good little victim when I got here. I love this part of this inventory. I had no problem identifying who pissed me off and who was responsible for my miserable life. And I had no problem saying what they did to me. Right? In most cases, we found it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, that were, including sex, that were hurt or threatened. See, the thing that's going to get me a resentment is when somebody threatens one of these things. If you don't threaten anything within me, then I'm not going to be upset, right? So it's the threat. It's the fear. The fear of losing something or not getting something from you or whatever it is. So it says we were sore, we were burned up. So it says on our grudge list, notice it says on our grudge list, right? I love this. We set opposite each name after what they did to us and identify, was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relations which had been interfered with. So we're looking at three columns already before we get to the template in the book. And I've made my list. I've gone back to the top and I've identified what that individual did to me to make me angry or the grudge I still hold. Then I go back to the top and I identify what was affected. The central column in the big book, in the four-step inventory, identifies those instincts of character that I feel you threaten or they threaten. My personal instinct, my self-esteem, my emotional state, my emotional security. Right? Pride. What was threatened? Was it my financial instinct? Were you trying to steal my money? Were you trying to steal my stuff or get in the way of me getting my stuff? Right? And my sexual security. Oh my God. Don't look at her the wrong way. Don't be eyeballing my girl. You know, all this stuff, you know, that I feel, that I would get threatened over, that I would get a resentment at you for. Right? And I have to identify what that is. Because if I don't, it'll go on and on and on, right? However, even though I've done the first three columns, all I've identified is what you did to me. Right? If I stop there, all I'm identifying is my victim story. You may have to do some of this next week. We'll get through resentments and we'll go. It says to conclude that others were wrong was as far as many of us ever got. Right? So it says, but with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth, and think about this, because we always have to hold this in the balance. The spiritual awakening, the gift that we're looking for, the gift that we're seeking, this relationship with God. It says, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, the business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, what it did for us, sense of ease and comfort. And we drink and drug again. Right? And then it says this. So we had to turn back to the list. It says we turn back to the list, for it held the keys to the future. So if I stop at the first three columns, I'm missing the future. I've got to identify the keys to my future, the keys to what's possible, the keys to freedom, the keys to relationship, the keys to spiritual experience. All that, right? The gift. It says we're prepared to look at these things from an entirely different angle, an angle we've never looked at. We always held them responsible. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominate us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy to real, had the power to kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, patience, and cheerfully that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. This is our prayer. This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. I tell you, that's not a real sincere... when I'm in that stuff, it doesn't come out real sincere. But we do it anyway. And then in the middle of the page, it says referring to our list again. So it brings us back to the list. This isn't on this page with the template, with this description. This is something different. This is an additional column that has not been identified except by here. Referring to our list, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where did I set the ball rolling? What did I do in this relationship to have this whole thing come about? Right? We're prepared to look at it. It says, where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? There's another column. Some group that into two columns, but I drew it in separate. Right? We have to look at what we did. I always liken this to my mom. You know, I stole her ring. It was an heirloom. It was passed down in the family for hundreds of years. And she had it in her jewelry box, and I was smoking crack at the time. And I stole her wedding ring. And I pawned it. Thank God I was shortly thereafter in the process of getting stopped again, right? And I told her, and then they went to the pawn shop and got it out. However, I had to look at something a little bit more than just the harm. I had to look at the hurt. Because if we don't, see, we're setting up the amends process here. If I didn't make amends in 9 for the hurt, I would have cut her short. Yeah, I stole a ring. I broke her freaking heart. How could my son do this to me? He must not love me. The sleepless nights, the excruciating emotional pain that I caused that woman. It's not enough for me to say, yeah, I'm sorry I stole your ring and leave it at that. God, is that selfish? This is so important because what we're doing here is we're going to the exact nature of the harm. We don't leave anything out on this deal. We may word it shortly, but we're going to embellish and dig in the fifth step, right? So that covers resentments. Next week, we'll cover fears. Thanks.
Hey, guys, if you could, thank Joe again. That was amazing. I'll bring Freddie up for the secretary's report. Good evening. My name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the 7 tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Jerry to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thanks. 1940 style Big Book sponsorship. From the 4th to the 2nd edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You can stand up for me. After the meeting, if you come up front for us, everyone who's recovered and available for sponsorship, can we please meet them up here? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you guys, and I'll see you next week.
I think Fred just mentioned it, but we have tonight's session and all the past speaker on podcast for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like it to invite everybody to our Big Book study up on the third floor Monday night, same time. And those who wish to thank the speaker can line up down the center aisle. We'll close out with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. Hey guys, just as a quick reminder, 75 feet from the door before you light up or vape, please.
Two. do-do-do-zan-zan-zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you laughing, ba 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 bo do, when you laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through, but when you crying, on the rain, so stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling, keep on smiling, baby, and I hope